This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Earlier this week, we spoke with Andrew Jarecki, the director of the new documentary Capturing the Friedmans. He'd set out to make a movie about David Friedman, a children's birthday party clown in New York City. But Friedman was evasive about his own family history, which led Jarecki to wonder what the family story really was. Here's a clip from early in the filmmaking process of Friedman telling Jarecki about his father.
He died of a surprise heart attack about 5 years ago, and it was very, very sad. He was, selfless and altruistic.
But in the end, he wasn't together with your mom.
He wasn't together with my mom at the end.
And when did they make the decision not to be together? Long before he died?
A couple of years before his death. There's some things I don't want to talk about.
Eventually, Jarecki discovered the family stories David Friedman was reluctant to tell. David's father, Arnold, collected child pornography. When he was arrested for getting some through the mail, it unleashed a much wider investigation. In the end, Arnold and his youngest son, Jesse, were accused of sexually molesting students in the computer classes that Arnold taught at home. Arnold and Jesse maintained their innocence, but fearing they'd be convicted, they pleaded guilty in the hopes of getting lighter sentences. Capturing the Friedmans raises questions about faulty memory, problems within the legal system, and the elusive nature of truth. It also gets to an issue that I often worry about as an interviewer. Someone who comes off as very sensitive or very amusing in an interview may have a much darker side that I remain totally unaware of. I worry that my interview may therefore be somewhat misleading. This is something Susan Orlean faced after she wrote a New Yorker profile of David Friedman back in 1994, which focused on his work as a clown and did not mention his family history. Orlean is known for her best-selling book, The Orchid Thief, which was the basis of the film adaptation. We invited her to talk with us about how she reacted when she learned the story of the Friedman family. Your profile of David Friedman ran in 1994, 7 years after Arnold Friedman was arrested on sexual abuse charges. Did you have any clues about the Friedman family when you wrote the piece?
When I worked on the profile, I had asked David a little bit about his family. I was curious about how his parents felt about his choice of professions being a clown. And he was very evasive. He just sort of shunted the questions off. And I decided that it was just a matter of him not choosing to talk that much about his family. And I really didn't pursue it more. My interest in the profile was very much in the here and now. It was, what's the life of a clown like? It seemed like an extraordinary life. Less about the psychological implications of being a clown or his family life. When I finished the piece, I got a letter. The piece was already done. It was already in print. It didn't happen to be on the newsstand yet. I got a letter from someone saying, did you know that David Friedman's father is a pederast? It was kind of a shocking thing to receive, and it was also too late to do anything about it and too late to add it into the piece. And I thought, well, what if I'd gotten that letter a week earlier? Would I have dealt with that? It was hard. It's hard to know. I mean, certainly when I think all of us in the back of our minds have this mythic notion that children's clowns are a little weird, that maybe all of them have some sort of unnatural interest in children. So I at first thought this is just one of these rumors. This is a myth. Somebody, maybe it's even a rival. I mean, it's a very competitive world. But it haunted me. And when I heard about the film, it really hit me.
I'm sure that your New Yorker profile of David Friedman encouraged a lot of parents to try to book David Friedman for their children's parties because, hey, he's the guy who was written up in the New Yorker. He must be good. Now, a lot of these same parents would probably have had second thoughts, rightly or wrongly, if they had known that David's brother and his father were accused and then pled guilty to sexual abuse charges, even though outside of the courtroom, they maintained their innocence. Do you wonder about the impact of your story on his life and on, you know, what parents are thinking now who hired him as a result of your article?
I'm definitely thinking about it. It's the nature of making public someone's life is so complex, and it's so fraught with responsibility. And in this case, first of all, I think it's you have to separate the fact of David from his father and his brother. David is a separate person. There was never any implication in anything that he had anything inappropriate to do with these kids. But if I were a parent and I heard that the clown I was going to hire had a family history like that, I probably wouldn't hire him. There's so much that comes with writing about people or exposing people to the public eye. When I was doing a profile years ago of someone who was in a religious position of, you know, of stature in his community, and he grew to feel very comfortable with me, and then one day he said to me, "Do you want to come meet my mistress?" And I thought, well, I really don't know what to do. A part of me was thinking, well, this is great for my story. I mean, here this guy is standing in his community as somebody who's of some position in a religious, fairly conservative community, and he's introducing me to his mistress. You know, this was overwhelming. I didn't know what to do. Did I want to have his wife read in the New Yorker story about him that he was having an affair? I didn't know if I really felt that I could put myself in that position morally. I mean, no matter what, as a writer, you still have to be a moral person and make decisions. It would have been good for the story. It would have added an element that would have been really interesting. I couldn't do it. If I had heard that David Friedman's father was a pedophile, you know, to return to that, what would I have done?
What would you have done? Do you think you would have written the story?
Yes, I would have written the story, and I would have folded it in with a great deal of delicacy, because I don't think it's fair to imply that he, I mean, it's very much in the American tradition that you don't hold someone responsible for acts committed by members of their family. I don't know. I guess this is the great question in being a writer and your moral obligations to your subjects and the fundamental inability to ever know the truth and your need to kind of acknowledge that in your writing.
Are there any parts of your piece on David Friedman that read differently to you now, now that you know more about the Friedman family? And here's the part I'm thinking of. You have a part in which you say about Friedman, he also started doing performances at parties for adults under the name David Friedman, as opposed to under the name Silly Billy, his clown name. For adult parties, he does magic, and he's developed expertise in the field of off-color balloons. He has mastered a balloon man with a rising and falling erection, and he believes he will soon have a breakthrough involving ejaculation.
The minute I heard about this movie, that part of the piece flashed through my eyes. It was something that when he showed it to me, I thought it was kind of crude. It's not the sort of humor that I find appealing. Now it's chilling.
Have you spoken to David Friedman recently, like since the release of the movie Capturing the Friedmans?
I've had a lot of email exchanges with him, and I hadn't heard from him in a number of years. I don't keep in touch with people generally after I've written about them. He got in touch with me about several months ago. He really wanted me to see the movie. He really supported the movie, and it mattered to him that I saw it, which is interesting given that we're not friends. We're not, we haven't stayed in touch. And he said he wanted to sit and talk with me about it, and we haven't managed to do that yet. But it seems interesting. I don't feel that he lied to me. I asked him a little bit about his family. He dodged not in an unusual way. He simply deflected the question. He never lied to me. Had he lied to me, I would be angry, and I would feel that I'd been manipulated. In this case, he simply avoided a painful subject, and it's interesting to me that he wants to talk to me now and maybe explain a little more what was going through his mind when I was working on the profile of him.
But that's the thing. If you've written a portrait of someone and then you find out something about their past that leads you to an understanding of them and their work that you didn't have before, particularly if it's something dark about their family, do you feel betrayed that they didn't volunteer this information? Or do you feel like, well, who would volunteer that information? And they have a right to their life and to their work without this really disturbing part of their family life, this really upsetting part of their family life, kind of penetrating every action that they make.
It's a two-edged situation. I guess to begin with, I present myself as a writer as fallible, as subjective, not as an omniscient observer of the people I'm writing about. And part of that is because I've come to believe and understand that it is impossible to know someone thoroughly. And we don't even know ourselves thoroughly. How could we possibly know someone that we spend a limited amount of time with? It's absurd. And I think some of the artificiality and inauthenticity of modern celebrity journalism is all about that, in my opinion. It's spending an hour in a press situation and then writing a piece with the authority and the voice of someone pretending to know somebody well. It's not possible. It's absurd. I hope that my perceptions and my sensitivity to someone's character will lead me to an ultimate truth about them, even if it's not a specific truth. David Friedman struck me as somebody who had a kind of deep, sort of tragic kind of quality, and maybe that's just the nature of clowns. So did I get the specifics right? No, but I don't think I got the truth about him wrong, the fundamental reality of his nature. Do I blame him for not telling me this? Absolutely not. When people, as it is, I consider it kind of a remarkable that anyone is ever willing to talk to a writer. So to begin with, it's something that it's a privilege if someone lets you into their life. I don't want to be lied to, but people lie all the time. Do I feel someone needs to volunteer something this tragic? No, it's not realistic to think that they would.
You spent about 2 weeks writing your profile of David Friedman and about 2 years writing about John LaRoche, the subject of your book, The Orchid Thief. You found out all kinds of things about John LaRoche, about his life, his divorce, his car accident, I mean, just, and his crimes. Was it difficult for you to figure out what to reveal, what to keep secret, and what was even true?
It was very hard to figure out what was true. John, in a way, was the ultimate modern subject. He was an unreliable narrator. In fact, that was part of what the book became about to me, was about the myths that he developed about himself. And there was a point in the book when I simply said, there were so many things he said to me that seemed incredible, seemed impossible. But what mattered wasn't that they, to find out whether or not they were true, but that he was a person who had a need to create a sort of fantasy ego, alter ego for himself. There was a point where he said to me that he had found the oldest fossil pearl that's ever been found. And I thought, well, that just seems hard to believe. But what was important was this was John's character, a need to make himself more important than he was.
Your book, The Orchid Thief, was a bestseller, and that was made into the movie adaptation, which was a very popular film. What impact do you think all of this has had on John LaRoche's life? Are you still in touch with him?
I hadn't been in touch with him for a while, and then I saw him when the movie was first being screened, and he came up to see the film for the first time. I think it was a very unnerving experience for him. Even though he was such an egomaniac and loved attention, seeing himself portrayed in a movie was sort of one step beyond what I think he was prepared for, and he was a little shocked. And then John being John, he started to really enjoy it. He's turned his life around a lot. He's got a very nice woman he's involved with. They have a baby. He's leading the life of almost a yuppie, which is hard to believe given who he was.
Do you think that you proceed any differently now when you're profiling somebody, now that you've had the experience of The Orchid Thief becoming a bestseller and a film, and now that you've had the experience of profiling the children's clown David Friedman and then finding out after the fact about his family and how his father and brother were both accused of sexually abusing children?
No matter what, I think when I'm profiling someone, I simply have to remind myself constantly of the really enormous moral challenge that it is. The unending fallibility of the process of reporting it's always present in my mind. And I think actually it's very useful to remain humble and be aware of how little you can count on knowing everything and what that means. And it means to emphasize, as I feel like I need to do, that this is a subjective portrait. It's a portrait. It's not a hologram. It's a sketch of someone, and it's someone processed through my perception of them. And I think that I can strive to having it be true, and I know that there will always be things that I'm going to miss. It's just impossible for that not to be the case. So it's a balance. It's a balance between hoping that the facts are right and acknowledging the limits to what, as a writer, I can know about my subjects.
Now, we've talked a little bit about how your writing has affected the lives of your subjects. Because of the movie adaptation in which you were depicted as a character, your life, I'm sure, was changed a lot by the movie. How has your life been changed, and what has that taught to you about the effect of being the subject of a movie or a profile?
It's changed my life quite a bit, which I guess I was sort of prepared for, though I didn't know what it would feel like. It's made me more self-conscious in certain ways. I mean, I've enjoyed it. It's been fascinating. It's a bizarre kind of adventure ride. It has made me self-conscious. I feel more observed. And then, really, in a way, to circle back to what we've been talking about, there's a great deal in the movie that's clearly not true. It's the fantasy of the screenwriter struggling with how to end his movie. So suddenly there's this image of me being presented to the world that goes off in this wild direction of me becoming a drug addict and having sex with my subject and trying to kill the screenwriter. And there are certain people who think this is true, and people who've seen the movie who didn't quite get the turn in the script.
Exactly.
Who look at me and say, "Are you still involved with LaRoche?" And I think, "Oh my God, what have I done?" It makes you appreciate the very, very quicksilver nature of truth and reality. And it makes me, I'm glad if it makes people a little bit afraid of me.
Why?
Well, instead of being just a normal writer, I'm a writer who pulled a gun on a screenwriter. It's kind of an impressive thing, but it does make you step back a little and think, well, what is reality? I mean, this was Charlie Kaufman's effort to make an honest adaptation of my book. And in order to do that, he had to completely change the facts. So it kind of addresses this issue again, which is truth is very mutable, and no one really can claim to have an absolute hold on it. In this case, my character completely transformed. It's not me at all, and yet that's me as being perceived by people who go to see the movie. So it's been kind of philosophically interesting, and it's made me appreciate my role as the intermediary between the experiences I have and the readers who read my work.
Susan Orlean, thank you so much for talking with us.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
Susan Orlean is the author of The Orchid Thief and writes profiles for The New Yorker. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.